Hello, everyone. Dan Dillman here, bringing you a little of this, a little of that. What are digital nomads? Well, I'm going to tell you a bit about them. Probably a bit more than you want to know at this moment, but hang on. Here we go. This summer, the Pew Research Center found that nearly a fifth of American adults either moved because of the pandemic or knew someone who did. A recent survey conducted by the Aceable Agent Real Estate Group found that 23% of respondents had decided to move within the next 6 months. Some of this is a result of economic trauma, as those facing unemployment look for less expensive housing. But there is also a large group that is deciding, for a host of reasons, that the way and the place they live should change. Rural states that early on were perceived as COVID-19 safe, such as Vermont and Montana, are seeing a surge of new people. Rents in previously booming cities, such as San Francisco, have plummeted as residents go elsewhere with their newly remote jobs. Short-term housing companies say that they have seen a dramatic growth in people looking to relocate. And according to research conducted this year, a business services company has said that there are some 10.9 million Americans, 49% more than last year, that now describe themselves as digital nomads. That is, people who are moving from location to location, people who are unattached to a physical workplace. Another 19 million say they want to become digital nomads within the next 2 years. We are in a transition moment when our spaces and our time and our roles are in flux. People are challenging the way things were. And although still a tiny group, these new nomads are emblematic of larger pandemic era forces which are shaking up American domestic life. Once a fairly niche community of primarily millennial and Generation Z workers, often in the gig economy and jetting between low-cost international destinations, digital nomads are now becoming part of mainstream culture. Their peripatetic lifestyle shows a lot about the way Americans are fundamentally rethinking their sense of work and of home, and about the challenges and the inequalities that may follow. Business has exploded during the pandemic as families look for new ways to vacation. There are also estimates that around one of every eight vans sold to a customer was a person planning a nomadic lifestyle. We've seen a huge uptick in people who live normal lives, but who spend 3 to 6 months of the year driving around because their workplaces now allow it. The shift to remote workplaces in the U.S. has been dramatic and sudden, and nearly half the workforce is still entirely out of the office, according to researchers. But there are clear socioeconomic divides that are reflected in who gets to work at home. There is a very straight class hierarchy. The higher paid white collar job people are working from home. An educational and racial breakdown is evident. Workers still physically tied to their workplace are, on the whole, less educated and less white than the group that is working remotely. They are also more likely to lose or to have lost their jobs. Another divide as well. Although some families are newly connecting with neighbors during the pandemic, Many white-collar nomads and remote workers are continuing to build lives that are relatively disconnected from a particular place. This is called a translocation identity, in which switching cities or neighborhoods has little impact on their friends, their media consumption, or distance from family members and social causes. Their sense of neighborhood isn't tied to a physical neighborhood. They are and can be more mobile. This virtual neighborhood, which has only increased during the pandemic, was already a hallmark of digital nomad existence. Although transient workers ostensibly focused their lives around travel and around new destinations, that location has always been primarily a backdrop for a fairly uniform culture. Nomads typically socialize with each other, don't learn local languages when traveling abroad, and are rarely part of a place they visit. They don't think of themselves as tourists. They think they're more sophisticated than that. That this isn't vacation, this is their life. But they act exactly like tourists. And over the past few years, a number of new hospitality companies has started offering a semi-standardized housing for digital nomads and other workers who want a mobile lifestyle. The company called Outsite, for instance, offers co-living communities and lodging across the world for remote workers and creatives. Physical spaces will always be important for humans looking for a sense of home. This is why all Outsite spaces have a similar look and feel about them. People find home through the people they surround themselves with, their rituals and their routines, and these can be taken anywhere. Yet accordingly, digital nomads express high levels of loneliness, despite the Instagram photos that would suggest otherwise. That's something researchers are starting to find among pandemic remote workers, particularly younger workers who do not have spouses or children. The new wave of domestic nomads is more likely to have traditional full-time employment, at least for now, but that still brings its own set of challenges. For this group, the new merger of work and home has brought up a slew of new questions, from whether it's okay to show co-workers the inside of one's bedroom on Zoom, or how to transition from private to work life without a commute. Perhaps most important, it highlights the difficulty of managing both work and children learning at home. And now we're going to move on to a category I call points of progress. We're going to see what's happening in other parts of the world. For example, access to reliable electricity continued to improve around the world in 2019, according to a report from the International Energy Agency. The number of people without electricity declined by about 90 million last year, hitting a record low of 770 million. For many countries, this reflects a trend of steady growth over several years. And in Asia, 1.2 billion people gained access between 2000 and 2019. Last year, the Indian government announced that more than 99% of its population had electricity. Researchers say that the pandemic has slowed or even reversed progress in some areas. Early estimates suggest that electricity access in sub-Saharan Africa, which is home to most of the world's unplugged population, will decrease for the first time since 2013. Decentralized and renewable energy solutions could help areas that are hit hardest by the coronavirus, help them get back on track to meet their 2030 energy goals, according to the report by the International Energy Agency. And then in South America, Brazil, Ecuador, and Peru, a surveillance system made from repurposed cell phones is helping to deter illegal logging in the Amazon. From 2001 to 2018, Brazil lost more than 100 million acres of tree cover. Instead of relying on park rangers to wander the forest and pick out sounds of logging among the natural clamor, the nonprofit Rainforest Connection is using old cell phones to build audio recorders that look like mechanical flowers, which are hoisted into the trees. The devices send 24/7 recordings to the cloud, where artificial intelligence software hunts for telltale logging sounds, such as trucks, chainsaws, human voices, even gunshots. There are currently more than 150 active devices in 5 countries around the world, including Brazil, Ecuador, and Peru. And they can each capture sounds up to a mile away. When the software detects a suspicious noise, it alerts local rangers. They can investigate the situation using aerial surveys and satellite imaging, which can take weeks to reach the rangers. The rangers can be closer to the problem. Rainforest Connection, which collaborates with other nonprofits, community groups, and tribes to install the technology, says that the phones are more efficient than traditional monitoring strategies. Project founder Topher White said that, quote, "Sound is the most exciting piece of data available to us that's not been fully realized for protecting the planet." And now we're going to move on to a category I call points of progress. We're going to see what's happening in other parts of the world. For example, access to reliable electricity continued to improve around the world in 2019, according to a report from the International Energy Agency. The number of people without electricity declined by about 90 million last year, hitting a record low of 770 million. For many countries, this reflects a trend of steady growth over several years. And in Asia, 1.2 billion people gained access between 2000 and 2019. Last year, the Indian government announced that more than 99% of its population had electricity. Researchers say that the pandemic has slowed or even reversed progress in some areas. Early estimates suggest that electricity access in sub-Saharan Africa, which is home to most of the world's unplugged population, will decrease for the first time since 2013. decentralized and renewable energy solutions could help areas that are hit hardest by the coronavirus, help them get back on track to meet their 2030 energy goals, according to the report by the International Energy Agency. And then in South America, in Brazil, Ecuador, and Peru, a surveillance system made from repurposed cell phones is helping to deter illegal logging in the Amazon. From 2001 to 2018, Brazil lost more than 100 million acres of tree cover. Instead of relying on park rangers to wander the forest and pick out sounds of logging among the natural clamor, the nonprofit Rainforest Connection is using old cell phones to build audio recorders that look like mechanical flowers, which are hoisted into the trees. The devices send 24/7 recordings to the cloud, where artificial intelligence software hunts for telltale logging sounds, such as trucks, chainsaws, human voices, even gunshots. There are currently more than 150 active devices in 5 countries around the world, including Brazil, Ecuador, and Peru, and they can each capture sounds up to a mile away. When the software detects a suspicious noise, it alerts local rangers. They can investigate the situation using aerial surveys and satellite imaging, which can take weeks to reach the rangers. The rangers can be closer to the problem. Rainforest Connection, which collaborates with other nonprofits, community groups, and tribes to install the technology, says that the phones are more efficient than traditional monitoring strategies. Project founder Topher White said that, quote, "Sound is the most exciting piece of data available to us that's not been fully realized for protecting the planet." Now I'm going to try to bring you up to date a little bit on the subject of big tech being brought under regulatory pressure. For the past 2 decades, the U.S. government has taken a relatively hands-off approach to Silicon Valley as tech companies have gained increasing influence over our day-to-day lives. But that might be changing. Google, Facebook, and Twitter confront a series of government actions that are aimed at restricting their behavior and are besieged by questions from Congress over how their platforms moderate the flow of information. An October report from the House Judiciary Committee outlined that the committee says are anti-competitive practices by digital era firms like Apple and Amazon. The report quoted Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg mulling the price worth paying to buy up competitors, as the company has done with platforms like Instagram. And now, after years on the sidelines, antitrust regulators are taking action, at least in one case. And last month, the Justice Department sued Google for using anti-competitive practices to maintain its dominance over search and search advertising. The suit claims that the company blocks rivals by paying device manufacturers to make Google their default search engine. The suit mirrors the government's successful 1998 case that said Microsoft forced computer manufacturers to bundle its web browser with its Windows operating system, thus locking out competitors. We'll see what happens as this suit continues. Stay tuned, and we'll look in the papers. It seems like a good day for some health tips. So I have a a modest number here to pass along to you. I hope they're helpful. The first health tip is about, of all things, Northern Irish soil. It's said to have healing properties. Residents of the Boho Highlands have been studying the alkaline dirt from a local churchyard as a folk remedy for 200 years. An analysis of this sacred clay revealed that it contains a previously unknown strain of Streptomyces, a bacterium that can halt the growth of four of the top six superbugs, which are resistant to conventional antibiotics. Scientists believe such traditional medicines indeed may prove to be a useful source of new antibiotics. Some of these cures might have been perfectly effective. People just didn't have any knowledge of the scientific principles or the biochemistry behind them in order to make them effective. And then there is a suggestion that you should be eating high fiber foods, because these can shrink your risk of dying early or of developing a chronic condition. That's not my view. That's the scientific view commissioned by the World Health Organization, which noted that people ate the most fiber, who ate the most fiber found in fruit and vegetables and whole grain cereals, and pasta and bread, were 15 to 30% less likely to die prematurely than those who ate the least. Heavy fiber consumers were also 16 to 24% less likely to suffer a stroke or to develop heart disease, type 2 diabetes, or colorectal cancer. The optimal fiber, the amount of intake, which is optimum, was 25 to 29 grams per day. American adults at the moment consume an average of only 15 grams per day. So I think we better increase that percentage, huh? Well, and then there's this. NSAIDs, such as aspirin and ibuprofen, may help to relieve depression. In an analysis of previous studies, researchers in China found that a daily dose of non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, that is the NSAIDs, was 79% more effective than a placebo at eliminating depressive symptoms. Several studies have linked depression to brain and body inflammation, leading to speculation that an overactive immune system, which can cause inflammation, could be a factor. Alan Carson, who edited this study, says this about depression, quote, "It may simply be the price we pay for having an immune system," unquote. And those are some things that will be good for us. There are several things that are not as good for us. A few suggestions here. Ultra-processed foods are said to shorten your life. At least a French study found that 10% increase in consumption of these foods, such as chicken nuggets, potato chips, and ready-to-eat meals, was linked to a 14% higher risk of early death. The researchers say some additives in ultra-processed products are carcinogenic and that chemicals from packaging may leak into the foods. Well, co-author of this study, Mathilde Touvier, recommends that people, quote, avoid these foods as much as they can, unquote. So you folks out there who've been putting away the potato chips and the chicken nuggets, take heed. Maybe this is something that you should know about. And one last item. You know that doctors' coats are often contaminated with dangerous bacteria and other pathogens. A review of previous studies found that up to 16% of the garments tested positive for MRSA and up to 42% for gram-negative rods, antibiotic-resistant bacteria that could cause skin and blood infections, sepsis, pneumonia, and other health issues. Researchers found that stethoscopes, phones, and digital tablets can also be contaminated with dangerous bacteria. So maybe the suggestion is when you go to the doctor's office, check it out. Maybe no white coats allowed, huh? Or you could make a few suggestions. And now it looks like we're about at the end of today's program. I want to thank you for tuning in. It's been a pleasure to serve you and to carry a little of this, a little of that over the airwaves. So until next time, Dan Dillman is asking you to be safe, wear your mask, please keep that social distance, but have a good day, my friends. Tune in for more info from a little of this, a little of that. I'll be waiting here for you. I really like to have you around. And so, it's good day for now.